This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
This week on the Sports Talk Garage podcast, we team up with John and James from the Outlap F1 podcast. So we just got back from an incredible guys trip to weird Austin, Texas for the United States Formula One Grand Prix. So instead of doing a normal episode, we decided to collaborate with those guys, and we hope you enjoy it. So let's get to the episode now.
We are four friends in three states across two time zones with a shared passion. Welcome to the Sports Talk Garage Podcast, where we hit the fast lane to discuss our favorite drives, from the track in the ice to the court in the ball fields. We are four lifelong friends who grew up with a love of professional and collegiate sports. Today, we are bankers, investors, professors, and entrepreneurs, but our love of sports has never changed. Come listen for the fun, gain some insight, and probably a few laughs, as we give you our perspective on those last liability changes, game-winning scores, and franchise players. This is the Sports Talk Garage.
Welcome to the Outlap F1 podcast. We have a very special episode tonight. We actually have a dual cast with the boys from the Sports Talk Garage in with us after our beautiful, somewhat short trip to Austin, Texas, down to COTA. So I am your host, James, here with my normal co-host, John, and a couple guest co-hosts, both David and Chris from the Sports Talk Garage. David and Chris, welcome. Why don't you tell us where you can find Sports Talk Garage?
Yeah, thanks for having us on. We are on social media on Twitter. You can find us at Sports Garage Pod. Also, our website, sportstalkgarage.com, find some information about who we are, what we do, things we talk about. All of our previous episodes are there. We mainly cover the big four American sports, both professional and college, so plenty of content surrounding you throughout the year.
Awesome. Sounds pretty good. And, you know, of course, Outlap, you can find us, me and John, on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can also email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. And, of course, the absolutely beautiful website that Chris himself has built for us at www.outlapf1.com. So make sure you follow us there. And let's get into some qualifying, huh?
Absolutely.
All right, so Q1, I'd say probably the biggest thing coming out of that would be Lando Norris. Would anybody disagree with that?
What you talking about, Willis? Oh, you mean the fact that he was P1 in Q1?
Yeah. That's basically what drove me to finally decide on a McLaren hat for the weekend. When it came up to McLaren or Ferrari decision, him finishing P1 and Q1 kind of pushed me over the edge, and I went with the old papaya lid.
So it had nothing to do with us walking 6 miles around COTA.
That's a real day. Apparently.
Every day.
Did not exist.
Every single day.
I just wanted to make sure you boys got your exercise in, that's all.
Yeah, we did. Your hat looks good. I like your hat.
Thanks, buddy. It was a lot of brisket, a lot of beer that we had to burn off throughout the weekend. So you guys can thank me for that later.
Oh, that is true. Yeah. That is true. No complaints there.
Yeah, I'd say there's really no big surprises from Q1 besides that, mostly because three of the four of us had correctly predicted that Stroll would not make it through. I do believe it was John that was incorrect on that one, so no surprise there. I don't know if you guys – listen regularly, but typically it is John that's making the blunders when it comes to predictions. So nothing new there.
I mean, listen, I just can't give faith on the guy. I just, you know, it's not going to happen. Hulkenberg needs a ride, so I'm going to throw out there, you know, maybe Hulkenberg into that second seat next year. Maybe Lance takes a reserve driver approach, simulator driver, something like that. Or just, you know, maybe maybe they stick him in the front office somewhere and he can make cold calls to rich energy people or something.
That's not happening.
Yeah. I don't think Daddy Stroll would let that happen, but I guess there's always hope.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was the only real surprise. Well, I guess I was a little surprised by Perez, but qualifying in, I guess, technically what, P19, but given the penalty, and I'm thinking maybe they didn't really push too hard, save the equipment. So it came out. What was that? Free practice two, I think it was, that he missed the weighbridge, two or three. So therefore, the unfortunate penalty for that, which seems a little harsh. The crime doesn't seem to fit the or punishment doesn't seem to fit the crime. He was forced to start from the pit lane behind the wall. So that's kind of sucked. But, yeah, a little surprise there. That kind of threw off my Stroll prediction, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, that threw it off, huh?
It definitely is kind of a harsh penalty just for missing the weighbridge. And, you know, we had no idea what had happened at the time. Obviously, we were sitting in the grandstands over there at turn 12. So we were kind of shocked when we found out that he would be starting from pit lane. Because it sounds like he did go back, but he had already changed the tires. They even put the old original tires back on. But since the car was touched, it makes it illegal. That is the penalty, unfortunately. I think it's way too harsh for such a simple little mistake. Maybe it'll be something they look into moving forward. I definitely think they should. For something to happen in free practice like that, just a simple mistake, like I said, and then all of a sudden you're starting from pit lane. Not that Perez had a shot to win the race. But, you know, if it were to happen to one of the top six guys, then all of a sudden your race is ruined, your weekend's over before it even really begins. So I think we'd all probably be in agreement that that penalty should definitely be reduced.
Absolutely. Yeah, we talked about it. I think it was way back in the middle of the season when this happened to someone. Was it at Baku? I think it was. And, you know, I know that if all of practice and free practice and everything else gets canceled, you know, they go – the race would be started based on, you know, free practice two times in this situation, but it's a free practice. I mean, there's no guarantee that even the parts that are on the car are 100% legal, that they've actually passed scrutineering process. So it seems a little funky that you're going to punish someone to that level of degree when there's not even a guarantee that the other 19 guys are up to par from a legality standpoint, as it is free practice. So, yeah, but we could probably talk about F1 rules and some of them being dumb for hours on end.
Yeah, I think that'd be pretty easy to do.
You want to move right to, for the sake of time, Q3?
Yeah, I thought it was good for Gasly making it into Q3. Continues to show that he's much better suited for the Toro Rosso life. Could be a few different reasons. We'll get into that when we get to Toro Rosso. But good showing by him, I thought. Of course, Albon, nice day for him. Qualifying, was it fifth? Albon was sixth. You're right about that. But, you know, overall, qualifying from our vantage point was a lot different than anything I'd ever experienced. Obviously, I'd never been to a Grand Prix in person before. But it definitely did have a lot of the kind of like the drama that you don't get from, you know, watching it on TV. So that was definitely an exciting piece. A little bit surprised to see Bottas finishing on pole there. A little disappointed, too, to be honest with you. You know, the Ferraris lacked the pace that we were expecting. And then Max Verstappen looked super strong. And I thought he was setting himself up for a really strong race day.
Well, that was interesting, too. I mean, the top four were only separated by, what, like a tenth? Mm-hmm. I think Hamilton was, to me, the biggest surprise. You know, this is a track that he's really honestly owned over the years. Had tremendous success here. Loves coming to COTA. Obviously loves coming to America in general. So I was a little surprised that he qualified P5 there. But, you know, I'll be a little bit of a homer. I thought I did appreciate the fact that after quali, his comments was basically saying, hey, it's not the car, it's me. You know, I overdrove the car. Car is set up properly. The car has the pace there. This one's on me. So, you know, we've seen lesser drivers blame the car, blame the team, blame whatever. So I appreciated the honesty there. It's something that I think he and Vettel, you know, whether you love or hate Vettel as well, both of them seem to be, you know, pretty honest when things go wrong and when it's their fault. So, but yeah, I think Bottas was a big shock for me. We'll have to get into predictions here in a second, but I don't know if any of us, you know, predicted Bottas. I mean, maybe David or someone like that did. I feel like one of us did. But I don't know.
That was Dino.
Yeah, Dino from Regen E Racing, and well, it's because he's in the future. Again, we talk about this. He knows the freaking knows it's gonna happen. I that was my biggest shocker. I thought the Ferraris would be stronger than they were, but you know, starting 2 and 4, you know, I was like, okay, that's on par. I think Bottas was really the big surprise for me. I didn't expect him to gain that pace. If there was ever a Mercedes starting P1 in COTA, I would expect it to be Hamilton.
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise for me in Q3 was, like, it seemed like the track just fell off there at the end. I didn't get to go back and watch qualifying, but did anyone actually improve their times on the second run in Q3?
I went back and watched it today, and you're right. That's an excellent point. I don't think anyone did, or definitely not any of the top runners, which was weird because, you know, obviously we were there. I didn't notice any type of, like, significant temperature change or anything. You know, even, like, cloud cover. I didn't notice anything that would, like, from an environmental standpoint, that would cause the track to be hotter or cooler. So it was weird that it seemed like it was ramping up throughout the entire weekend. And then suddenly on that second run in Q3, it's like no one could find the pace. You know, there's a lot of yellow sectors going on there. So I'm not sure what the deal was there.
Yeah, it's actually a really good point, Chris, because, yeah, they set their first lap on their first out lap. They set a nice time, and then that was pretty much all she rode for that Q3.
So prediction-wise, James, you got our numbers written down? But let's get into the fun stuff.
Yeah, I do, actually. You know, three of the four of us, myself, John, and David, all had Leclerc finishing on pole. Chris had Hamilton there at pole. Definitely all wrong as far as that goes. And then the three of us that had Leclerc in first, we all had Hamilton in second, with Chris having Vettel finishing in second there. So he got that one right. There's a point. And then myself and John, we each had Vettel in third. So at least we had one of the top three guys in there. David then had Max finishing in third place. So nice call there. And Chris had Leclerc in third. So overall, not our best effort as far as qualifying predictions go. But we did have a pretty lucky good guess as far as the pole time goes. What was the official time? I think it was a minute 32.029. And I think John actually
thank you.
This one with, man, you really pulled this one out of nowhere with a minute 32.011. So what is that, like 18 wow. hundredths or 18 milliseconds off?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's basically the blink of an eye. So I'll take that. Appreciate that, guys. Appreciate the love.
Take all the credit there.
Yeah, well, it doesn't happen much, so I gotta really, you know, go all out when it actually happens. Big celebration. I need to have some, like, confetti go off in the room here or something.
Yeah, I'm sure the wife would appreciate that.
Yeah, get some pyros going. I don't know, all kinds of fun stuff.
Or you could just play Queen again for a little while. That would work too.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, yeah. God. I can't listen to that song again for a very long time.
Well, you heard it about 14 times on Sunday, so.
As we sat in the horrific traffic trying to leave COTA.
So you want to go lights out? Start getting into the race start?
Yeah, let's go ahead and move into the race start here. I thought both the Silver Arrows with incredible starts, really only bested by Kimi Raikkonen, who probably maybe start of the year. Would anybody argue with that? Gaining, I think, was it 5 places on the first lap alone for Kimi?
Yeah, he went on that, like, what was the outside approach, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
He was, like, partially on the track, partially off. It was a little dicey there for a second, but the Iceman made it work, man. And then I love COTA, the way it's set up. It's such a challenging turn one. We had opportunity after the race to walk up there and kind of, like, obviously the elevation change. I mean, it's just shocking how big the hill is. And then it's just such a funky turn one, the way it appears so wide, but the apex feels so small. So, you know, you've got all these guys spreading out wide and then coming together, you know, to in kind of Calamity Corner over there. So it makes for an excellent start every single year. There's always something entertaining in turn one there.
Yeah, we definitely did have a little bit of action there. Pretty much right off the bat between Albon and Sainz, who collided a little bit and really changed the race for Alex Albon right there in lap one. So, you know, if you had to place blame on somebody, because we understand it's lap one, a lot of people want to say it's kind of a racing incident, but if we had to place blame, who would you place that on, Chris?
I put it on Sainz. I don't know. I mean, as you know, it's a racing incident, so, I mean, it's hard to give blame to either one of them, but I don't know.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean,
fair enough,
like,
one vote for Sainz.
I would go vote for racing incident. I guess if you had to, you know, pick a side, I would probably lean towards Sainz, but, you know, I didn't think either driver was doing anything stupid. I thought that they were both just making evasive maneuvers, just trying to stay clean. And, you know, unfortunately, like I said, when you make that weird, you know, almost, what is that? Like a, it's not a 90. It feels almost like a 180 degree turn going back the other direction. Yeah, I thought it was just a matter of just guys running out of space. And you know, so it sucks for Albon because, you know, obviously he took the brunt of it. It looks like it had to change the wing. Sainz, it seemed like Sainz got off scot-free, which is a little bit weird. I thought for sure that he would have had some more damage just given the contact. And, it, you know, it looked pretty bad, at least on the onboard of Albon. So I guess lucky or whatever. I don't know how he managed to get through there without taking a lot of damage there.
Yeah, David, you got any different perspective on that?
I think I'm actually going to fall in line on this one. You know, it was beginning of the race. I'm just going racing incident, both trying to just get to the spot. Kind of ran out of room. And, yeah, it was interesting walking that in. You know, it's this wide track and all of a sudden just this quick turn that everybody's got to get through. And I'm going racing incident on this one.
James, I know you're not going to blame this on your boy Albon. You know, you've got a bet ride. Well, maybe you're disgruntled because you've had a bet riding on Albon for so many months now that he would get on the podium and he let you down. And, you know, now you got to go double or nothing with the F1 actually, coffee guys.
Actually, I might really surprise you because I'm actually placing most of the blame on my true boy being Charles Leclerc. You know, he probably had by far the worst start of the race, one of his worst starts of the year, and was a little bit of trouble. And then he kind of went way wide out of nowhere, which is what forced Albon to go wide to avoid Leclerc. And then that's ultimately what caused him to run into Sainz. So I think Albon was trying to ride down the middle of the track, sandwich in between two guys. Thankfully, he avoided the three-man sandwich over the weekend, must I note. But, you know, with Leclerc running out wide like that, Albon had no choice but to avoid him. And he probably didn't even see Sainz. And, of course, then collided with Sainz a little bit. So I'd actually, if I gun to my head, I'd probably place most of the blame on Leclerc, both for his terrible start and then going out wide there.
Wow. Would have never guessed that. You feeling all right over there, bud?
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty good. I'm just kind of surprised you guys all took the time to notice just how severe it is in turn one from going so wide to so skinny, because the three of you were so busy eating those damn ice cream bars that you got from the Williams team. And I was totally left out on that. So I'm a little bit sour on that still. I know you guys are all Williams fans now because you got a little sweet during the track walk there.
Hey, they
got
to get fans somehow.
Yeah, that was a damn good ice cream, I got to say.
It looked pretty tasty.
Hot day, you know, it was just
it was
the perfect
fitting. It was
end
perfect.
Of the race. That's what you get for disappearing, taking pictures of random crap.
Fair enough.
I mean,
go ahead.
So you're talking about Leclerc having the worst start of the race, but did you forget about Vettel?
Well, I was going to move into that, so – I think off the line, Leclerc was worse, but overall for lap one is definitely Vettel who takes the cake there. We talk about Kimi Raikkonen gaining five places. Pretty sure Vettel lost probably five places on that first lap or two there. Clearly something was wrong right off the bat, and then I think was it lap eight there that we really saw some issues?
Yeah, lap eight, suspension failure. Yeah, I mean, we were talking about during the race, you know, what we could hear talking back and forth, but – it seemed like he, like going back and watching the race, Crofty kept saying, oh, it's the tires aren't the temperature and the medium tires just aren't in the proper range or whatever. But it seemed like it didn't look tire related to me at all. Like he had multiple lockups, which that early in the race seemed weird because they weren't in places that he felt like he would be pushing to the degree that he would get a lockup. And then coming out of like every single slow corner, the car just seemed really shifty, like just purely like squirrely, which, again, if this was Stroll or Grosjean, I would be like, this guy just can't drive. But, you know, as much hate as we get Vettel sometimes, I don't think that the four-time champion was having trouble getting, you know, into straight line. It just seemed like something was off from the very beginning. Yeah, it's, you know, it's possible he lost a couple of places there just through the chaos of it. But, I mean – as much as I want to give my boy Hamilton credit, I mean, to get past on the outside going through the S's, and then Leclerc, you know, got past him like with a freaking breeze. It wasn't even remotely a challenge there. So to me, there had to have been something technical to happen during the, you know, the installation laps. I don't know how many installation laps he ran prior to the race, or prior to the formation lap. But I wonder if something happened, if he had a curb on one of those or something like that and just started the damage and maybe just hadn't broke, you know, entirely until lap 8.
Yeah, and at one point he radioed in that he was, you know, dealing with some severe understeer, and he wasn't sure. He was asking the team if there was some sort of damage on the car. He said he didn't hit anything, which he didn't. But, yeah, he had some pretty bad understeer, and ultimately he ended up, I think, was it in turn 9 where he ultimately had that suspension failure. And that got pretty sketchy there for a little bit with the front left tire being well off the pavement. And he did a hell of a job to bring that car to a stop. I'm in a really good place of the track, too. We didn't have to have any kind of safety car or anything. They were able to get it off quickly. So good on Vettel for getting the car off the track safely and allowing the race to continue.
I thought it was funny when I watched the race again today, the Sky Sports kind of criticized him for parking the car in such a safe manner. They were like, had he just parked it in a weird spot, he could have helped his teammate out and probably gotten at least a virtual safety car to get Leclerc back up in there in the mix. You know, I don't think Vettel is going to do anything to help Leclerc out. I think that ship is long sailed. So if anything, he was like, I'm going to find the best place to pull this car off. Oh, there's a Marshall right there. There's a gap in the wall. Let me park nice right and gently up here. Yeah. So, you know, he very – with all that damage, he very easily could have just parked in the damn middle of the track and caused a safety car if he wanted to. But and probably no one would have thought two things about it, given the damage and how sketchy it was coming out of that corner. But, yeah, I thought that was funny. I'm like, really? I've never seen someone get criticized for parking in a safe manner. It's usually the opposite. You know, it's usually the Stroll or the Perez where they just literally just park it down the middle of a straightaway somewhere.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. And it we didn't even see it when it happened. We had to wait until they showed the replay on the Jumbotron across from us. But pretty crazy scene at the time for sure. So let's go ahead and move into some of the team breakdowns. We'll get the quick ones out of the way right off the bat here with Williams. I mean, besides the fact that you guys got ice cream from them, is there really anything else to say about Williams? I mean, we got a couple races left of the Kubica reign of terror over there, Williams, and then I think we're about ready to close the book on those guys.
Well, I don't think Chris got any ice cream, so he may be disgruntled as well.
But hey, but, yeah, I'm slowly buying my fandom one ice cream bar at a time.
I mean,
I thought it was cool actually seeing Williams, you know, with their slow pace during the race, like get further and further back from, you know, the rest of the field. So that was pretty cool to see actually in person how slow they were.
That's a good point though. It was interesting. Like we see, obviously they don't get a whole lot of TV coverage. And so we just kind of see the pylon on the graphics and the time going up and up and up, how, you know, the gap between them. But when you're there in person and you can physically see, like, okay, they're even by the time they got over to us on turn 12 and lap 1, there was already a little bit of gap there. And then it looked like Russell and Kubica actually had a little battle going, which what's comical about that is that just slowed them down even more. So while they're battling each other, the rest of the field is literally just leaving them. And then it's also letting Albon, who obviously had to pit lap 1 due to that incident we talked about a second ago, it's obviously just allowing him to creep back up further and further. So, yeah, I think that's we've probably already said too much about Williams. Kubica retired, some kind of, I think, a hydraulic issue or something like that. I don't know if I buy that. I think it's just a matter of them saying, screw it, we don't even feel like running anymore. I mean, Russell was in 17th, two laps down at the end of the race. Kubica probably would have been 3 or 4 laps down had he continued to run. So, it's, yeah, these guys suck. Not Russell, but the team itself and Kubica.
Yeah, there was definitely a larger contingent of Polish fans there for Kubica than I thought there would be. Pretty long trip for those boys. But, I mean, you got to respect their love of sport and of Kubica to make that kind of trip for a guy who is clearly the worst in the field by far. So, good on the Polish people, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's dedication. You're going to spend a couple of $1,000s minimum to come over there and watch your boy, guaranteed to be dead last. So, okay, good on them. I don't think I saw a single George Russell fan while we were there, which is a little bit of a shame. But, yeah, we saw a lot of Polish flags.
Yes. All right, so moving into Haas, the quote-unquote American team, who very few of us, I think, would claim to be one of our own. But yeah, pretty much a ho-hum race for the boys at Haas. You know, Grosjean starting 15th, ending 15th. Didn't see much of him. And then Magnussen got a little of excitement out of the crowd there at the end and pretty much ruined our chance at seeing Verstappen and getting a chance at Hamilton there at the end. I think it was a blown break, and then he went roaring by us, kind of missed that turn 12 straight over the pavement and then ultimately into the gravel with, what, was there two or three laps to go at that point?
Yeah, he had been complaining for most of the race with the headset I had on. I was listening to his radio. He was complaining that he had a long brake pedal and that it felt really soft. You know, he kept asking him to check the temperatures, and they kept saying that actually the temperatures were in line, just basically had him dialing back the brake bias. And then when it actually blew basically right in front of us, I'm pretty sure the only thing he said was like something to the degree of "I told you so." but you know, I think that you know, the rumors of Magnussen and Grosjean going to NASCAR, I think that we need to start that going. Because what was it, Thursday? I think both of them had an opportunity to get into a Haas NASCAR car, and that's the most fun that I've seen either one of these guys have in quite some time. So who knows? Maybe, you know, Raikkonen did it once. Why can't K-Mag and Grosjean put them in a truck and let's see what they can do? Could you imagine Grosjean in an oval? Oh my god! As soon as I said that out loud, I'm like, oh god, that's frightening.
Well, I think
that's a bad idea.
I think the rubbing in his racing mentality might be better suited for Grosjean, so who knows?
Absolutely. He's going to be the next Earnhardt.
Yeah, there you go.
Apologies to everyone in Annapolis, North Carolina. I didn't mean that.
Like Talladega Nights, for real.
Oh, man, there we go. There we go. See? It's meant to be.
It's fitting.
This is a sign. This is the next coming. Unfortunately, we got to watch both these idiots.
Except
on
F1 he wouldn't
next
be any
year.
Good.
No, but he would be for some glorious like wrecks, or you know, I could definitely see him wrecking on pit road or just plowing right into, you know, he'd be that guy that ran into the back of the safety car or the truck.
Pace car.
Yeah, I could see it. Well, no, he'd never be close enough to run into the pace car, but. Fair maybe point. Maybe the guy the dryer out there, you know, the quick dry.
Well, we've already had one former F1 driver, Juan Pablo, do that before, so it wouldn't be out of the question.
That was spectacular too. That was a hell of a fireball that came out of that. But anyways, I digress. All right, moving on.
All right, so hitting on Alfa Romeo here. They gave us a little bit of news post Coda. With Antonio Giovinazzi officially re-upping with Alpha. I guess it's kind of surprising, but at the same sense, not really. I think that's the seat that kind of Ferrari decides who's going to be there. And they want this Italian kid still. I'm sure they want the Italian driver with the Italian company, but I don't see Giovinazzi ever making it to Ferrari. I think that have to be some pretty desperate times for them to resort to bringing Giovinazzi up to the big squad. So, pretty much all that told me was that's one less place for Hülkenberg to end up. So I don't know what that means for his future, but it's not looking very bright at this point. And then for Raikkonen, we kind of already talked about his amazing start, but maybe his highlight, at least that we saw at the time, was his battle with Hülkenberg towards the end of the race. They were getting into it pretty good there, right in front of us at one point. So that was probably the most exciting part of the race as far as Alpha goes.
Yeah, Raikkonen said after the race that finishing 11th is he might as well just DNF him. He seemed like, you know, even though he had a pretty eventful day, moved up, what, 6 places when it was all said and done. He was pretty disgruntled, not having the best of days. And then going back to the Giovinazzi thing, I think I threw out my wild, crazy prediction for 2020, you know, or maybe 2021. Leclerc being the number one driver, you need that wingman that's not going to be a threat. Giovinazzi is the perfect guy for that. So, you know, even though he hasn't had a ton of pace, he hasn't really done anything stupid. So, you know, perhaps there is future there in Ferrari. But yeah, for as far as Hülkenberg goes, you know, he said he would never go to Williams. I'm wondering if he's eating some crow right now.
He's calling Claire up saying, all right, how much do I need to pay you to put me in Formula One? Because his options are officially, if you remove Williams, he's officially done as a Formula One driver. But I don't know. Any other thoughts on Alpha from you guys? Yeah, not too much to say about Alpha. I don't know if I'm going to agree with you there, though, John. Like, there's as far as Giovinazzi goes, there's not challenging the top dog in Leclerc if he were to move to Ferrari, and then there's not challenging anybody. If that was the case, then I could see Ferrari going just for drivers' championships with Leclerc and just kind of not caring about the constructors, because I don't see how Giovinazzi can bring in the type of points to help a team in the constructor standings at all. But I guess that remains to be seen. And
if you look at it, though, I mean, he outqualified Raikkonen again. It's happened multiple times throughout the year. And he had that little streak there where he was out pacing him on track as well. I don't know if Kimi just decided, like, screw it. Like, I think it was during the summertime. Maybe Kimi was too much barbecuing or something. I don't know. Maybe put on a little pounds, maybe too much tequila. I don't know what was going on there. But, you know, he has held his own against Raikkonen, which other drivers have not over the years, so.
I mean, I guess, but I don't know what version of Kimi we're getting for the most part of this year, because he's not in a competitive car, and I don't know if he's really got the want to week in and week out. So now if you were to tell me that Kimi decides to ultimately retire after this season and then Hülkenberg takes his spot in Alpha and Giovinazzi beats Hülkenberg throughout the year next year, then I can see your argument that maybe he has a shot at making it to Ferrari. But until you put him with somebody a little bit more competitive and that has the want to, I'm just not a believer in Giovinazzi at all.
Well, it's a wild prediction for a reason.
First hot take of the night.
Yep. Got to have a few here and there.
All right. Fair enough. I'll give it to you. But let's go ahead and take our first break before we get into the next group of teams here, starting with Toro Rosso. But until then, we'll be right back.
Hey, Sports Talk Garage podcast friends, Matt here. Let's talk for a minute. Most of us have made a sports bet or two with friends or coworkers at some point on our favorite teams. But when you want to make a bet past the bragging rights stage, or for more than $5, it can be difficult outside of visiting a casino, which usually isn't very accessible. Well, MyBookie is the way to make that happen if you're not sitting at Caesar's Palace or MGM Book in Vegas. MyBookie is a premier place to bet on all your favorite pro or college football action every weekend. They always have the most up-to-date lines and the most prop bets of any sports book on the planet. So, if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and bet with the best at MyBookie. Best part is, if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. That's right, if you put in $1,000, they'll give you $1,000. That's double your initial deposit you can use on all your favorite picks. Use promo code LATEFEES to activate the offer. That's promo code LATEFEES, all one word, to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
All right, welcome back to the Outlap F1 podcast. Me and John here with Chris and David from the Sports Talk Garage, talking the United States Grand Prix from COTA this past weekend. Moving into the seventh place team currently, that being Toro Rosso. Let's start with Pierre Gasly, who had yet another successful weekend. I guess it's kind of hard to call it totally successful since he was a DNF, but he did look a lot better throughout the weekend, I'd say. He's been on a really good run since he's gone back to Toro Rosso. And really what I want to know from you guys is, do you think that car is just better suited for his driving style? Or is this just because there's way less pressure driving for Toro Rosso? Or maybe even just a mixture of the both. So what do you guys think about that?
That's a good question. I mean, although they have very high technical alliance, obviously with Honda and obviously the – I don't know, they're technically even a parent company, but officially a Red Bull, the big team. I don't know how much setup information is being swapped back and forth. Something I'm not sure of. I guess I should look this up. I wonder, did he keep his same race engineer when he swapped from, you know, Red Bull back to Toro? I'm not sure if that's ever been noted by anyone. If so, then that proves my thought process even more. To me, I think it's a pressure thing. You know, Kvyat is in the latter stages probably of his career, kind of make this comeback. You don't have a whole lot of pressure there. But then you put him in a car, you know, with a likely future world champion. It seems to me like it's a mental game. You know, at the front, in a Red Bull car, he's expected to be in the top four every single week. Whereas a Toro Rosso, you know, if he finishes in the points, it's considered like a slam dunk and a, you know, lock of a hell of a weekend. So that's a huge difference between top four and top 10.
What do you think, David?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of go along with that there. Lower expectations kind of drive free. You don't really have those, I guess, expectations on you that you have to finish in a certain spot. Kind of maybe go out there a little more free-handed and just be able to just coast along. So it can definitely help just mentally is probably where that's going. But, yeah, definitely with – it would be interesting, though, if you did bring a race engineer over, have some continuity with, you know, previous years. But I'm going, you know, mental here.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a mental thing for sure. I'm sure the car plays a part of it. You know, the Red Bull's got to be more geared towards Max Verstappen. He's clearly the best driver they have in their entire program, whether it be Red Bull, Toro Rosso, or anybody in the junior program, which seems to change every few weeks this year. But, you know, it's got to be a pressure thing for him. And it's a shame, you know, like he seemed like a good driver last year. I was kind of excited to see what he'd do for Red Bull. And then he just kind of laid an egg all year. So a total disappointment for him. And now it just continues to confuse me why it hasn't been officially announced that Albon's going to be on Red Bull and Gasly's going to be at Toro Rosso. So I don't know if there's something else going on behind the scenes that we're not aware of, but it seems like an obvious decision that they're just delaying for whatever reason. I don't know if they just want to keep the pressure on Albon, not let him know that he's got it locked up for next year to see how he responds. But, I mean, he's been responding about as well as you can ask so far, besides the whole failing our bet. But
well, I mean, one good thing that came out of all this is that you can get some excellent Pierre Gasly merchandise for on clearance. So I saw a lot of people actually. Like, I was actually really shocked how many people were wearing Pierre Gasly stuff. And I wonder if they just, like, really wanted some Red Bull stuff and was like, hey, this is, you know, 60% cheaper. And it, yeah, sure, it has a Gasly logo on the side, but does it really matter, you know, if you're a Red Bull guy? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's got to be mental. But you brought up a good point a minute ago. That car, clearly the Red Bull car, was built around Max Verstappen. He's literally, as you mentioned, the only one that's been around for multiple years now. He is literally by far the veteran on that team, despite his age. So clearly he's been the one during the offseason doing all the simulator work. He's clearly the one that gives the most feedback. He's obviously their number one driver. So any kind of feedback that he has is clearly going to outweigh, you know, Gasly or whoever is in that seat next to him. So for natural reasons, that car is going to better suit Max. And yeah, you're right. It could be a very, very weird setup or a very weird driving style to what Gasly has. You know, maybe it's more lean towards torque or, you know, there's a lot of variables in there that could be changed to suit one driving style or the other. So maybe you never had a fair chance, and maybe that's why guys haven't stuck around, you know, too long with Max. But, you know, hey, Albon is making the most of it, and I don't want to get too far into his day until we get a little bit later on the show. But, yeah, it's what was the DNF for? Do you guys remember for Gasly?
I think he collided with someone towards the end. Was he with Checo as well?
I believe so.
I'm not sure.
I'm gonna go back and watch that.
It was just blanking on me as to, because I remember it happened, I think, right at the end of the race, if I'm not mistaken, because I think you called it out that Gasly was a DNF, and we were like, huh?
Yeah.
So it feels like it happened in the last lap or so.
Yeah, because even with, like, rewatching it, the telecast obviously was focused on Hamilton at the end for obvious reasons, even though he was on a cooldown lap. So all attention was focused on him. So they never really touched on it. And it was definitely put on the back burner. But yeah, that day, you know, we saw that, but I never really got good information on what caused it.
I'll have to go back and rewatch it again. We'll get to the bottom of it. What do you guys think of Kvyat's day? I mean, started 13th, technically finished 12th, plus one lap, and then had a little incident there at the end. James, you want to talk us through the incident real fast?
Well, the torpedo is officially back, baby.
A few races in a row now, yeah.
Yeah, yes, it is. Right at the end of the race in both instances. So it was really hard to find video on the incident. You know, on the telecast, like I just said, they were mainly focusing on Lewis Hamilton, even in his cool-down lap, for obvious reasons again, which I don't want to keep bringing up. But, you know,
I'm cool if you keep bringing it up.
Yeah, I bet. You'll get your time later. But
we are the champions. Sorry, keep going.
We did finally find the video you were nice enough to send in my way, but it was a couple of onboards from both him and Checo. So, you know, it looked like Torpedo just went for a typical Torpedo move. It clearly cut the corner. I don't know if all four wheels are ever off at the same time, but he cut the heck out of that corner and then just didn't brake and ran right into Checo, ran him right off the road, breaking his front wing. So after that, you know, he got his way, I think, what did he end 10th across the line. So he thought he finished in the points. He was pretty excited about that, happy with himself. And then, of course, he got the five-second penalty to drop him down a couple places. But, I mean, 100,000,000% his fault on that one. I don't know if there's any kind of argument from any of you guys saying any different. But, yeah, he threw that one in the corner in typical Torpedo style and didn't get away with it this time.
It looked pretty similar to my driving style on F1 2019. you know, sometimes you just got to use that guy as an extra brake. And, yeah, it's like Checo was there on the outside, and he was like, all right, well, I could brake, and clearly this is my last opportunity to get in front of him, or I can pull another NASCAR move. You know, maybe they learned something from Grosjean and Magnussen from the day before watching the hot laps. But, yeah, I mean, he just literally drove right into the side of him and then kept on going. I don't know how much damage he took himself, but obviously it was less than Checo, and he was able to stay in front. But I thought it was interesting that after the race, he said something to the degree of basically the penalty was a joke. This is unacceptable. Like the worst penalty ever. And I'm like, have you seen, I want to ask the guy, like, did you see the replay of yourself? Because apparently it looked very different in your mind than it did to literally everyone else. But yeah, it got no TV coverage, unfortunately. But I'm glad that finally, 36 hours later, F1 decided to get it posted on the website.
Yeah, that was shocking that he would even say that. But I mean, that's Kvyat for you.
We've been given a lot of credit to Kvyat this year. In fact, for a while there, we were shocked when he didn't get the call up and when Albon did. But yeah, maybe the pressure's getting there. Maybe. I mean, I was going to say maybe Red Bull's junior program is getting some pressure on them, but that's a joke right now. So I don't know what the pressure is, but it seems like, yeah, certainly he's had some recent run-ins with people.
Yeah, I mean, they pretty much said that those four drivers will be the four drivers between Red Bull and Toro Rosso. I mean, we all know Max Verstappen's obviously got one of the Red Bull seats, and it's pretty much for sure that Kvyat's got the Toro Rosso seat. So it's pretty much between Albon and Gasly. So, yeah, I don't know where the pressure is coming from for him. Maybe he just, you know, has realized that it's getting towards the end of the year and he hasn't done anything too stupid. So he's just trying to get it all out now. It's got to be something because he went from like a new man to same old Torpedo. So, I mean, I guess look out for him in the last couple laps of the race.
Well, I mean, maybe his agent has told him that Christian Horner's on the phone with Hulkenberg or something like that. So maybe he's like, oh crap,
some pressure.
Albon's coming back and I'm gonna get the boot if I don't make up these places to get into the points. And he's just getting desperate. I don't know.
We'll see. I guess that could be
my hot take number two of the night.
You're on fire.
Yeah. I think I'm officially like cooked at this point, but let's carry on.
Moving on to Racing Point now. who has 65 points, just 1 point ahead of Toro Rosso now coming out of the U.S. Grand Prix, and about 18 behind Renault. So holding on to that sixth place by the skin of their teeth. Thanks to Sergio Perez, who had one hell of a race day, starting in pit lane after a silly mistake during free practice, and finishing 10th in the points. So I thought that was just an absolutely incredible race by Sergio Perez to kind of save the day for his boys over there at Racing Point. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting. Coda has proven over the years that this is certainly a circuit that you can overtake in, and Perez has proven throughout this year that he's clearly by far the number one driver on that team, and it's not even remotely close. So I feel like on a week-to-week basis, he just shows that Lance Stroll doesn't belong in Formula One. But obviously, when your daddy owns the team, you know, you can do whatever the hell you want. So, yeah, I mean, hell of a drive from him. It seemed like every time he was coming past us at turn 12, he was making a move into that 12, 13, 14, 15 section. And one key thing that I, you know, you called out the point difference there, you know, that 1 point, these guys came in with Toro Rosso tied at 64. So they're battling for six in the constructor standings, which is worth literally millions of dollars when it all is said and done. So that little torpedo Kvyat move, honestly could have cost the team a significant amount of money. You know, not saying that he would have gotten past him. Obviously, I think it was the last lap of the race when that happened. So, you know, it's likely they would have finished 10th and 11th anyways. But, you know, Checo getting himself up there, and he's literally the only one representing for that team. I would guess that a large percentage of that 65 points was down to Checo. And, yeah, he's broke that tie. So only two races remaining. It's going to be a very interesting battle to see if Toro can do anything to get themselves back up in the sixth place.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, you know, the midfield all year really has been where the action has been, race in and race out, whether, you know, the TV wants to show us that or not, unfortunately. But this was a perfect example of it. And it was nice to be able to see it with our own eyes right in front of us. Because like you said, just about every time Checo was coming through turn 12, he was looking to make a move on somebody and made things real exciting for us. So, you know, I'm excited for the next two races to watch Toro Rosso and Racing Point go at it. And then, you know, Renault and McLaren is pretty much settled now. We'll get into that in a minute. But, you know, there's still some battles to watch in the midfield. And that'll really be where the focus is with the top being settled now going into these last couple.
I mean, you look at how crazy is it. Checo moved up 10 places in the race, and Lance Stroll only moved up one. And technically, the only driver that he actually was able to solidify a position over was Sebastian Vettel through DNF. So, yeah, I think that just describes Lance's day as a whole. But yeah, I'm really interested to see. You know, theoretically, there's certainly no reason that Racing Point couldn't get up there and challenge Renault as well. They're definitely not out of reach. Obviously, McLaren is at this point, but there is still a small percentage of chance to move up to the fifth as well. So it's going to be interesting if Lance can do anything to help the situation out.
Yeah, I mean, they would need a pretty epic finish, I think, to gain that kind of ground on Renault and Renault to, you know, have some DNFs, which definitely isn't out of the picture there for the French boys over there. But I think Sergio Perez, too, was able to manage a – did he pull off a one-stopper or did he stop a second time? I believe he only stopped the one time on lap 24, and that was it. So just further proof that Sergio Perez is possibly the best on track, maybe with exception to Lewis Hamilton, at controlling the tires and making them last. So – once again, that helps him out and allows him to get a point for the team.
So, Chris, David, this is your first time seeing Lance Stroll up close and personal. any takeaways there? Did he blow you guys away?
Gosh, one word, underwhelming. I would say expectations were already low, but, I mean, pretty much what I expected going into this race, seeing him in person, and, yeah, pitiful.
And did you see any – Lance Stroll fans at all? Like any Canadians?
Oh, I mean, gosh. No. Nope. Pretty sure that outside of his family, there are none.
His family and his boys, you know. Other than that, no.
Yeah, or someone who works for his daddy's corporations that's forced to wear something to not get fired.
there's probably the occasional fangirl out there, but yeah, that's about it.
yeah, so no, to your point, not a single damn one that I see.
Yeah, it was pretty lackluster showing by the Canadians. So that was disappointing, I think, overall.
Well, I think there was a lot of Canadians there. They just don't.
They don't care.
they're smarter than,
Fair point.
Yeah, they're not going to adopt them.
They're a little more, they're a little smarter in their fandom than the Polish, possibly, is what you're saying.
Canadians have a rich history of, proud athletes, through their hockey years and things like that. So, and they know trash when they see it, and they clearly recognize it in this situation.
Fair enough.
So speaking of trash, we'll move right into Reno,
who officially is out of the running for best of the rest, which should come to no surprise. But there is a few nice things I can say about at least one half of the Reno garage this weekend, that being Daniel Ricciardo. Great race by Ricciardo, first off, but more importantly, easily the greatest helmet I've ever seen in Formula One. I am, of course, a huge Texas Longhorns fan, and to see him rocking what looked like a Texas Longhorns helmet as his racing helmet was totally sweet. Every time he drive by us in turn 12, as soon as he started turning just a little bit, you could get the perfect angle to see the Longhorns on his helmet, and that gave me a smile just about every time. Even when he passed Lando Norris, I think it was lap like 3 or 4, I was able to get that on video actually on my phone, but I like Lando Norris way more, but I was rooting for Daniel Ricciardo all weekend specifically because of that helmet. So
it looked like you're playing with yourself over there. So now I know why.
I was very happy. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I know. Props to Danny Rick. I mean, every time, obviously, he loves America. I grew up watching NASCAR and Dale Earnhardt, which is why I took number 3. And every time he comes here, he always has an interesting helmet. Or last year, his race suit looked like it had cowboy boots built into it, and stirrups and things like that. So, yeah, I definitely have to say, I don't know who painted that helmet, but it's probably one of the best helmets I've ever seen in Formula One. It was the detail, it was just, there's no comparison. So we've seen a couple of cool ones throughout the year. I really like Lando's. Valentino Rossi tribute a couple weeks ago, but this one definitely tops the whole ceiling. Definitely helmet of the year for sure.
Just wait till that thing hits eBay at some point.
Oh, geez.
I've been saving up.
James is selling his house just to be able to pay for it. He hasn't told his wife this yet, but
it's an investment.
It's coming down the pipe. Yeah.
But yeah, started 9th, finished 6th. It seemed like he had some really, really good battles, like you said, with Lando, kind of back and forth. He knows how to work that section in front of us, 12, 13, 14, 15. It just seemed like he could get the absolute most out of the car through that section, made up a lot of time, made some great overtakes. Obviously, he's damn good on the tires as well, so he's proven over the years. So, really phenomenal race by him. And honestly, nothing really bad to say about Hulkenberg. He was a lap down, but still both solidly in the points of 6th and 9th. Hulkenberg moved up a couple of places as well. Didn't really see as many true overtakes or proper battles there with Hulk, but I think a double points day for Renault, given everything that's happened this year, is like winning a freaking Grand Prix at this point. So
yeah, definitely. And, Ricciardo, another guy with just a one stop on the day, a few laps before Checo Perez had his. So made the tires last. And, at the end, though, Lando Norris was gaining on him pretty quickly. I think he gained, a ridiculous amount, 9 seconds over just a couple laps, but wasn't quite enough to catch Ricciardo there at the end. But, he had a great drive, deserved every bit of it. So I think overall a really strong day for Renault, actually.
For sure.
Thankfully, too little, too late, because our boys over there in Papaya at McLaren, sealed up the best of the rest, which definitely came as a surprise, at least to me. I know that for sure. I saw them as being like a 6th place team maybe coming into the year. Didn't have very high expectations. didn't really like McLaren at all going into the year, as I kind of detailed on the podcast as we've progressed throughout the season. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of both those guys. Huge, huge fan of Lando. It was awesome seeing him do so well in Q1 there. So, and then he had a really strong race, even getting a pass on Vettel there. Yeah, Vettel was having some issues, but it's always cool to see a McLaren pass one of the top-tier teams. You know, we got to see him have some nice passes right in front of us as well.
Hopefully it's just a sign of the future for 2021 or so.
Yeah, no, I think it was you that tweeted earlier today talking about some of the greats you've seen, whether it be Schumacher or Hamilton, Vettel in his prime, stuff like that, and how lucky and fortunate you feel as a fan. But it's like, in these next few years, the youth we have in Formula One could easily outpace what you've seen to this point. I think without question, guys like Lando and Leclerc, Verstappen, Russell, going on and on. So it's really exciting. And I know we talk about it all the time, but that just goes to show how excited we really are for the future of F1. And, you know, we're not really going to get too far into the 2021 regs that finally came out and showed us some things of what it might look like. But if they can get those right, that combination with these kids, we could really be in for something special.
Yeah, I agree. If the teams don't let them down, we've got a hell of a battle on our hands for the next decade to come. It should be pretty dang exciting.
Yeah, should be good for business.
So you want to move on up to our other favorite team?
Who, that being a Red Bull?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think couple good drives by these boys. Verstappen starting third, finishing third. He had really nice pace throughout the day. Could never quite make it to the next level and get into second or first. I think he kind of got screwed at the end by K-Mag, of course. You know, with Lewis Hamilton losing his tires at the end, kind of falling off that cliff, I think Verstappen really would have had a good chance at getting him. And like we were talking, as it looked like it might be coming down to it, there was no way Lewis Hamilton was going to be battling to keep that place if it was Verstappen, not the guy you want to be trying to defend when all you need to do is finish the race to become world champion. So I think we kind of missed out on a good overtake there. But, you know, good day for Verstappen nonetheless. And then Albon, I thought, was just incredible. After a terrible start, dropping down to P20, just what a drive to come back.
Yeah, I think I told Chris when Max was coming up on Hamilton, I think I told him, like, I just tell Lewis to just park the car, just like move as far over off the circuit as possible. Allow Max to safely go through and then resume back in. Let him get a 5 second or so barrier. I mean, they had 50 seconds on Leclerc, so no competition from behind. So yeah, at that point, yeah, there, if it comes down to a championship drive, the last thing you want to go is go through 12, 13, 14, 15, or go through the S's with Max trying to pass you. That's I'm a Max fan, but he's definitely not the guy I want trying to overtake me while I've got a championship on the line. And then I want to get into Albon too much, because I feel like we might have some other things to say about him in our award section, potentially speaking. But I mean, pitted on lap one. I think they had to change the wing. They definitely had some other damage on the car as well, and it was just shocking to me. I mean, it seemed like five laps in or so, he was still in last place. And it didn't really seem like he was making up a whole lot of ground on the Williams guys as well. But then all of a sudden, he just came out of nowhere. And then, yeah, it seemed like suddenly the tires warmed up or something like that, and he just started making ground. I mean, we were seeing just closing the gap. Obviously, it looked like, you know, Kubica and Russell were getting into it, which helped a little bit. And I don't know if maybe that kicked him in the extra gear and he said, hey, I mean, I'm making a little headway, kind of dangle that carrot in front of him or what. But literally every single freaking time he came by our section there, it seemed like he was overtaking someone. And then we wondered, you know, obviously pitting on lap one, we knew most likely it was going to be a three-stopper for him. And to come back and make three freaking pit stops and to still finish in P5, I mean, holy crap. That's un-freaking believable.
Yeah, it really was. Like, because every time he'd pit, then there's just more people for him to overtake, and he would just slice through the field yet again. A super, super, super impressive drive by Albon. And like, I don't know why as soon as the race ended, Red Bull wasn't like, yep, he's going to be our second driver next year. It's settled 100% for sure. But no, the mystery will continue.
But yeah, I'll save my other comments for him later in the race or later in the episode.
Fair enough. So we'll go ahead and move on to my boys over there in Ferrari. A weekend to
all
be
three
forgotten.
Of your boys.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right. I had some Ferrari friends on the trip. Unfortunately, we didn't have much to celebrate, except maybe the fastest lap that Leclerc set. But
it's because you guys picked the wrong team.
Yeah, could be something like that. Oh boy. But you know, we've spent the last few race reviews talking a whole bunch about Ferrari, so maybe we don't have to go too deep into what happened this weekend. But you know, it started with practice when Leclerc lost the engine. Was just a sign of things to come, at least in Vettel's end. Leclerc, you know, started fourth, finished fourth. Like I said, had the fastest lap. He was basically on an island the entire race, not fast enough to hang out with the big boys in the top three and much faster than the McLarens and the Renaults. So pretty much all alone throughout the race except when he was lapping a few guys. But kind of a boring race for Leclerc, to say the least, with the old motor in there. And then Vettel, we pretty much already talked about what happened with him, but just overall very disappointing day for Ferrari after what had been a really strong second half.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly coincidental or not that, they get accused of cheating and suddenly lose, 5 tenths off the straight. At one point, I think I told you guys watching the tracker on my phone during the race, he was on the same tires, same very old tires as Hamilton, and was literally over 2 seconds a lap slower than Hamilton. I'm like, yeah, I don't know what happened there. They looked like they were on par to have a good weekend. Obviously, second, fourth, starting the race. I don't know if they had to put in a motor, like a pre-cheating motor from back at like Melbourne or something. Maybe it was like that first version they had to stick back in there. It didn't have all the, illegal oil drain parts and everything. I don't know what's going on there, but yeah, sucks for you guys.
Strictly a coincidence.
Obviously, Chris is a Vettel fan. He lost his driver early on, and then you and David, you just got to see your guys just kind of cruising
just
around.
Kind of cruise.
Like he was, taking the kids for a stroll.
Yeah, I mean, Leclerc basically just had a nice Sunday drive, and that was about all I can say about that day.
So we can move on because I know you don't have much to say there. David, I don't know if you have anything to add, but
Let's go on to your gloating here. Get it out of the way.
Yeah, I'm just going to move on to my boys. Yeah, that's fine.
I'm just going to go ahead and let you take this whole section. I'm going to turn my phone down. Let me know when it's good to come back.
Come back in about 10 minutes.
Go get something to drink.
Let's see if I can get this under 10 minutes.
Talk to you later.
Yeah, I mean, let's move on to the first place team, six-time champions. Mercedes, and now six-time world drivers champion, my boy Lewis Hamilton. Again, we were a little surprised by the starting in fifth place, but honestly, I wasn't sure. I thought part of me was like, all right, he only needs to finish in eighth at worst if Bottas happens to win this thing. Obviously, Bottas, we'll start with him. I mean, hell of a day from him. Can't really fault him. I like to give him a hard time as best we can, but he honestly drove a perfect weekend starting in once Q3 rolled around. I mean, I don't think he put a single wheel wrong throughout qualifying or the race. Stayed out of trouble, managed the tires well. The big question was whether it was going to be a two-stopper or a one-stopper. One of the things I was really happy about is that, Mercedes actually let them battle it out. So they put Bottas on the two-stopper and, gave Lewis the option. He said he wanted to go long, and they did the one-stop. So I like the fact that they mixed up the strategy. Obviously, Lewis has proven over the years that he can manage the tires well. So if anyone had a chance of making that one-stopper work and winning a race, I thought it was him. And, he finished a couple laps short in that regard, but even you guys who aren't Lewis Hamilton fans, I think you still got to give props to the guy for going out there and trying to win a race when he knows that, especially with the pace of Leclerc, or I should say lack thereof of Leclerc. I mean, he literally just could have turned the motor down to one and still easily finished on the podium.
But that competitive spirit came out, and you know, he got a really nice battle there with Verstappen, and I got a little nervous when the those two almost collided near the end of the race. But yeah, I'll leave it there. I'll say the rest for a little later. I don't know, what did you guys think of their days?
I mean, I was super impressed, like you said, that Mercedes let them battle it out. You know, he didn't just pull over and let Bottas by. I think they touched wheels, actually, right in front of us in turn 12, which was really exciting. And, you know, I was rooting on Lewis at that point just because I was happy that he was going for it and not just kind of phoning it in and just finishing in the top eight to secure it that way. He was actually going for it, which I was happy to see and kind of shows the champion he is and the true competitor he is. So that'll be the nicest thing I say about him.
Chris, and you watched F1 for years now, and you've seen, obviously, a lot of guys – team up against Lewis, and you know, he's beaten every single one of them. I think, you know, only one or two of them have ever stolen a championship from him while they've been his teammate. But I mean, what do you think of kind of his year? And I mean, number six, it's impressive.
I mean, very impressive. And I think I saw a stat where, you know, he's on track to, he could beat his own record for most points in a year, which I think he set last year. So, you know, it's just unstoppable. And the thing is, like, he hasn't done so well past, you know, basically after summer break, but he had such a large lead, he didn't need to. So, you know, of course, I could also say he's in a Mercedes, and that helps a lot. But I give congrats to Lewis. He's definitely the best driver out there, and he deserves it.
I think the only next question needs to be is when is he going to become Sir Lewis Hamilton? But there's probably some politics involved in that. But yeah, I mean, that was kind of a dream come true for me to see him clinch a title live in person. You know, it's to me, it's equivalent of being at the you know, World Series, the Super Bowl, or something like that. I mean, it's that, you know, I've been with him since 07, and for him to bring six titles to my memory bank and just the experiences of the year, it's been unbelievable. Hopefully we got another, you know, another one or two to go before he calls it a day and heads on out to enjoy his vegan restaurants and his clothing lines and things like that. But you know, I can't say enough. I think he's a hell of a champion, a hell of a representation of Formula One.
Yeah, I mean, I think for you, seeing him win a driver's championship right in front of you is pretty sweet. But the fact that you just watched his last one ever is even sweeter. Ooh. So that's pretty good.
Ooh. I can get behind that one there.
Oh, keep dreaming, boys. Keep dreaming.
Oh, we can hope.
I don't see Leclerc being a 2020 world champion. I'm sorry. So I think it's going to come back down to Bottas and Hamilton and see which one's more consistent. I don't know. Ferrari's got to figure out another way to cheat.
We can get into that in a few months when we do our 2020 season preview. But until then, right for right now, let's take a quick break before we get into some fan emails from the week. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to the United States Grand Prix race review for the Outlap F1 podcast. Once again, I am James here with John and the boys from Sports Talk Garage, Chris and David. As usual, you can get a hold of us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast. Of course, you can email us, as some of the fans did, that you'll hear from in a minute, at chatnow@outlapf1.com. And, of course, our website, thanks to Chris, www.outlapf1.com. So, David, real quick, you want to remind the people how they can get a hold of you guys?
Definitely. So on Twitter, we are at Sports Garage Pod. Email just can be pretty simple, feedback@sportstalkgarage.com. And website, all the great information is on there, sportstalkgarage.com. Make sure you go in there, check us out. All our previous episodes are on there for your listening pleasure.
Awesome. Very good. So, yeah, everybody make sure you go check that out. Give us all a follow, maybe a 5-star review. And definitely subscribe on your favorite podcasting app, because we are available on all of them. So, John, why don't you go ahead and go into these fan emails? It was nice. Got quite a few fan emails again this week. So it's a couple races in a row we're getting to hear from you guys. So keep them coming. We always like getting them, always like reading them and kind of breaking them down. So take it away, John. Yeah, so I'll try to make these brief because we have quite a number. But F1 Fanatics Mike from the F1 Fanatics YouTube channel says, absolutely incredible feat by Lewis. His consistency and dominance is brilliant to watch. He's been challenged this year, but just beaten away anything that stood in his way. So congrats to Bottas, too, on his most successful season in Formula 1, which is true. Daniel Harris from Chicagoland says that he loved that Lewis never gave up and was going for the win, was not afraid to run his teammate off the track, which he kind of did. Daniel, I was kind of hoping we could breeze past that point. Appreciate calling that out. He could have hung back and done what he needed to do to win championship, but he pushed anyways. Luke Clevenger says that his takeaway is that too often we forget that champions are consistent. Consistency is what builds championship runs, and the Mercedes team is nothing but consistent. It's something that he sees lacking in Max and Charles at this point, which I can't disagree with. He says that he hopes that everyone appreciates how special they've been. We probably won't see another run of this kind again, and that he jokingly kind of said that they took away some of the fun in the sports on Earth, and that they've made winning look boring. But that's kind of goes back to just how good they've been. That they're so damn good, you double take when they don't win. So I think that's an excellent viewpoint. That it is shocking when you don't see a couple of these top guys on the top step. So. And then our buddy NDP, who we actually got to meet, he's from Chicago. We had to finally meet him in COTA. He actually wrote a phenomenal piece kind of detailing his weekend in COTA, from the start of trying to get down there in the snow fest of Chicago, which James and I had to deal with, unfortunately, ourselves, just throughout the weekend. So we're going to actually post this entire thing under our blog section on our website, so you guys can read it, because it is such an incredible read. But I wanted to highlight just a couple of things out there. First, when he talks about, he says, track observations, hang on, because it's going to get bumpy. COTA is a state-of-the-art purpose-built F1 track, but it's built on some of the worst and most useless soil imaginable, which is true. So much that truckloads of dirt had to be brought in from Arkansas try to provide a base for the track. Apparently it hasn't been enough to withhold against the extreme heat of Texas, and over the past 7 years the track has taken a toll and created several large bumps that have created issues across throughout the track, and that bumps would definitely be the most complaint of drivers all throughout the weekend. But at the end, they all got through it, with maybe the exception of Vettel. We don't really know what happened there. Skipping forward just a little bit, his email, which again you can find all on our website. Race day, he called out the second ever sellout at Circuit of the Americas. Actually, back to back Saturday and Sunday were sellouts. Turned out to be a championship clincher, starting from P5. Lewis Hamilton knew what he had to do. He got the work done on lap one, quickly dispatching both Ferrari cars and getting into podium position. It was apparent that he was going to win his championship number six. He just wanted to do it in a sense of style. Unfortunately for him, his only problem was his teammate Bottas, who clearly had eaten his go-fast porridge earlier that day. And skipping on a little bit, he said he agrees with us. Alex Albon passed more cars than he did on his way into the circuit, which I thought was pretty comical and probably somewhat accurate as well. Obviously had to make the early pit stop, but he managed to pass three quarters of the field again and come back P5 and win a very honorable driver of the day. Talks about the midfielder battles. As we mentioned earlier, they did not disappoint. Renault, McLaren, Toro Rosso, the Racing Point all provided a heck of a show. He said on a personal note, this was a weekend that for him was about making new friends in the sport. He said, I had more intelligent, engaging, and honest conversations with more people this year than I ever had before. The U.S. fan base may not be the biggest, but it's among the smartest fan bases that I've ever seen, and we are learning and growing. I feel honored to count several folks, including the recipients of this email. Thank you, Andy. You're making us blush a little bit over here as new friends. Here's to keeping Austin weird and for a great USGP weekend. So appreciate that, Andy. Again, there's a lot more out there, so we strongly encourage you to go check it out on our website, because it is an incredible read, especially if you're on the fence about whether you should go to Austin in 2020.
I think Andy P could definitely help you make up your mind and most likely will swing you into buying your tickets ASAP. So that was our fan emails for this week. Thank you all to Mike and Luke and who we missed in there. Obviously, Andy P and our buddy Daniel Harris as well.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, you guys, for emailing in with your thoughts and stuff. Always nice to get those. So keep them coming. But now I think it's time we get into our race predictions and figure out who claims victory. And I think it's neither one of us, John. I think we've been bested by guests yet again. So we might have to review this whole bringing on guest predictors thing. Felt like a better one when one of us wins. But as far as race predictions go for us, each one of us had Hamilton winning. Obviously, did not happen. He only ended up in second, but we each did get at least one right there. I had Leclerc finishing in second, as well as David. John, you had Vettel, and Chris had Max Verstappen. And then as far as third place goes, I had Vettel. John, you had Max. David had Bottas, and Chris had Vettel. So kind of tough to decide who actually wins this one since it looks like David had Bottas and Hamilton just not in the right places, and Chris had Hamilton and Max also not in the right places. So I'll give it to you guys as a tie. Congratulations there. However, and David, yeah, and you beat us, so good on you.
We'll take it.
But David, nice job as far as the fastest lap goes. The actual was a minute 36.169. Not very close, but you were the closest with a 137.1 flat. So nice job there. And then, of course, we did ask the question of would Hamilton clinch. We all said yes, and obviously we were right on that one. So pretty nice job overall. Thanks for coming on and helping us out with those predictions. We appreciate that. And I do want to mention that John had predicted a fifth-place finish for Leclerc, and thankfully he was not right. Leclerc ended up in fourth place there. A disappointing fourth place, but at least he can't gloat about that part of it.
I don't know. I got to say, I'm getting pretty good at this Leclerc prediction thing. So,
well, we'll see what you got.
I haven't decided on Brazil yet. I feel like it's somewhere back in the P20 range, but I haven't quite decided on.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, we'll have to wait on that a couple weeks here. But now we'll move on to our award section here. And we'll start off with the weekly rubbish award. I'll go first with this one. Kind of had some back and forth with this one in my head, trying to decide who I was going to give it to. But ultimately, I've decided on old Robbie K, Robert Kubica, mostly because I'm running out of time to talk trash about Kubica. Only got a couple races left to go. So got to get a few digs in here. You know, clearly the worst guy on the track, in the worst car on track. So just a bad weekend for him, as usual. Didn't even finish a race. You know, Williams had started the year by being, I think, the last team remaining without a DNF, and now it seems like they're DNF in just about every race. So, yeah, Kubica for weekly rubbish. Yeah, that could be it. He may have just ran out of gas. Who knows?
That's true. But they didn't have enough to fuel the car all the way.
They let Russell get the glory of the finish there.
They're siphoning gas from other cars.
Oh, boy. So, David, who you got for weekly rubbish?
Well, I feel like you're reading my notes here. I also got old Bobby Gavoy. Yeah, very unforgettable. Nice. Kind of sad to watch. Not much going on there. So, yeah. Give him the hardware. Let him take it home. At least he could put something on his mantle.
What about you, John?
I'm going to surprise all you guys, and I'm going to give this to Mr. Number 16, Charles Leclerc.
Oh, God.
Because, you know, when you are in supposedly the fastest car on the grid right now, and you are almost a minute behind your competition, and a guy who had to take an extra wing and three pit stops finished just behind you, I feel like that is a deserving of a rubbish award.
Just pouring salt in an open wound, huh?
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
All right, and Chris, please start talking so we don't have to keep hearing from John.
Well,
I couldn't just pick one rubbish driver, so I'm just going to pick the whole Haas team as my rubbish award winners for this week. Mainly because I feel like they've just gotten worse and worse as the season's gone on. And obviously it's their home Grand Prix in the US of A, and they didn't do anything again. So I don't know. Not much to say. That's just, they're just rubbish.
When's the last time Haas scored a point?
9th back in Russia. That's like the only point they've had since summer break.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was going to guess the summer break. I forgot about Russia.
It's been so bad, I totally put Russia out of my mind. All right, moving on.
All right, so we'll go into the weekly analysis paralysis award. John, you got one for us this week?
I don't think I do. You know, I can always look for a reason to call out Ferrari or whatever the case may be. But no, I think, again, I'm going to do one of yours, actually. I'm going to do a reverse analysis award, since you've pulled a few of those over this course of the season. And I'm going to give it to my boys at Mercedes for allowing the two championship drivers to go on opposite strategies and actually race for a race win and potentially a race or a world championship. And, you know, so no team orders, just get their elbows out, go on different strategies and see which one can make it happen. So.
All right. Fair enough. David or Chris, either one of you guys got a weekly analysis paralysis?
Yeah, I got nothing for this one. So I don't feel like strategy played too much into, you know, poor strategy decisions here that really hurt somebody, at least at the top.
Fair enough. Ferrari. I'm going to give it to Ferrari just because it seemed like before the race, their strategy before the race, it seemed like they were obviously trying something different because obviously their cars didn't work. So that's all I got. I didn't really see any strategy play throughout the race that caught my eye, but I'll give it to Ferrari just for sucking.
A ding on Ferrari is a good in my book.
Fair enough. I'm actually going to have to give my analysis paralysis award to one of our own, that being Chris. You know, we kind of mentioned it earlier.
Well, this is taking a turn.
But you know, as we mentioned before, he surprised me. He was actually worse than me when it came to picking things. We stopped at every single vendor on that track. And Christopher waited till the very last day, the very last vendor, to finally decide what shirt he was going to get. And then to top it all off, it was a damn Haas shirt. His week, and then he gives him the weekly rubbish award to really just bring it on home. So
the best award of the night.
I'm giving my analysis paralysis to Chris.
I do my best to support my guys. I really want him to do it
tonight.
Chris's wife would be happy because Chris almost took out his wallet about 47 times throughout the weekend. But he laid it to the last trailer at the exit 2 hours after the race.
A good 7 miles into that walk, he finally found something.
Yeah. Passed up on the 2-for-1 pizzas and went with the Haas shirt.
That is true. I forgot about that.
I made a bad decision.
Again, that's a reverse analysis paralysis award in Chris's favor. Yeah, he was enjoying that Detroit style pizza from Rainy Street. You know, still, and once you go Rainy Street, you can't go Pizza Hut, even if it is a 2-for-1.
He also enjoyed both of your pizzas from Rainy Street.
Well, we weren't going to mention that part.
Detroit doesn't do much right, but the one thing they do right is their pizza. So I'll give them that. All right, so moving on. We'll go dark horse of the day. David, why don't you take it away with yours?
Man, going Racing Point, Sergio Perez. Anytime you can start at the back of the pack and finish in 10th, that's a good day for me.
All right, very good. What do you got, Chris?
I'm going to go with Danny Ricciardo. I mean, he had a good race, clean race all day, and then held off Charlie Norris at the end there, and he just had an all-around better day than his teammate did, so I give it to him.
All right, very good. What about you, John?
I actually had it going to both those guys. So Danny Rick and Perez for all the comments just said.
All right. And I actually went with Danny Rick as well. I know I gave John some grief about it last race, but I just had to find another excuse to give Danny Rick some more love for that killer helmet that he was rocking all weekend. And I'll finish that off with a hook 'em. So let's go ahead and go into the overall driver of the day. Let's go with the obvious one here. John, let us have it.
Well, it's not going to be Lewis Hamilton. Although what? I think he had a phenomenal day. I'm going to be objective. I mean, there's the driver of the year, the driver of the century, the driver of the world. Wow. Those clearly all lots fall of superlatives Lewis Hamilton. Yeah, I mean, like, he's already gotten driver of the universe. You know, he's already topping all that. But, to narrow it down to the micro level, which is nothing, micro about Lewis Hamilton as he's the greatest in the world. But going back to the race itself, I got to give it to my boy Albon. I'm still a little pissed off that he, made me buy someone a beer. But literally passed, as Andy P said, passed more cars than he did and probably we did combined. And passed him two or three times because he had a three stopper to get through the race. But P5, man, damn, spectacular. So, one of the best drives that I have seen. And you're right. I think he surely has cemented himself in that seat for next year.
All right, very good. Who you got, David?
I'm actually going Albon as well. I mean, making up all that time, passing people, coming back. It's pretty impressive. And I'm actually surprised John was objective on this point here.
Same. I try. It's for the fans, guys. For the fans.
What about you, Chris?
Well, since y'all are going for the obvious, I'll go for the other obvious one. Valtteri Bottas. He had a great weekend. first place qualifying. And then, as John said earlier, just didn't miss a step. The race, passes Lewis late in the race for the win. So, got to give it to Bottas.
All right, fair enough. And I'm hopping on the Albon bandwagon myself. Just an absolutely epic recovery drive. One of the best drives of the year. So Albon definitely deserves that one, but Bottas is definitely deserving as well. So I think that wraps it up for our awards, and we'll go for a quick recap of our driver standings. Obviously, first place being Lewis Hamilton with 381 points to clinch the Drivers' Championship for 2019. So congratulations, Lewis. And second, we got Valtteri Bottas with 314 points, so he's locked into that place. And then we got Charles Leclerc with 249 points, Max Verstappen in fourth with 235, and Sebastian Vettel with 230. So positions three through five, still up in the air with two races to go. I'm hoping my boy Leclerc can hang on there in front of Verstappen and Vettel, but only time will tell there. So let's go into some final thoughts here on the cool-down lap. John, you wanna take it away here for a minute?
Yeah, I just want to get your guys' thoughts. I don't want to open up too much controversy, but I thought it was a really, it's hard not to compare Hamilton and Schumacher. People have been doing it for a while now. A lot of people, hate one of these drivers or hate both or whatever. But, when you look at, Chris and David and I had an interesting, not argument. We had a spirited chat about Michael Schumacher at our lovely Tex-Mex in Austin, Texas, Sunday night after the race. And so I just want to do a quick comparison. So for 1991 to 2006, for Schumacher, those were clearly his competitive years. Race starts 250, 68 poles, 154 podiums, 91 wins to top all time, and then 7 World Drivers' Championships also to top all time currently. And then Hamilton, obviously, in his competitive years as well. Race starts 248, so there's two between the two of them right now at this kind of epic, moment in both their careers. 87 poles, obviously the most of all time in Formula One, and continuing to grow that. 150 podiums, so just 4 behind Schumacher at this point. 83 wins, so what is that? Just 8 left to tie Schumacher, and then obviously now 6 World Drivers' Championships. So I think there's a lot of debates about who's the greatest of all time, and a lot of people will say that neither one of these guys are the greatest of all time, and some of the guys who brought up the sport and through the 60s and 70s and some 80s You know, you look at Senna and guys like that, maybe they're the greatest of all time. But I think it's important to just see that at this point in their careers, with likely Hamilton still having hopefully a few more years in the tank, just how close those numbers are, you know, to be only two racing starts away from each other, but to be separated by just four podiums and eight wins and one championship. It just shows the dominance of these two guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive on both accounts. You know, Hamilton, I'm sure, is going to finish ahead of him. He's already got him in poles. He should pass him in podiums, no problem, next year. Race wins, he'll have a legit shot at passing him by some point next year, and then could very well tie him as far as driver championships go by the end of the year. So numbers-wise, it's very close. We kind of were joking on the way to the track on Sunday that if Hamilton was more like Schumacher, then at his first opportunity, he would have just taken Bottas out of the race and crashed them both out, thus giving him the win. But thankfully, Hamilton's not, you know, the killer that Schumacher was, and actually gave us a nice race to watch. So I'd probably have to lean in favor of Hamilton over Schumacher if it was up to me.
Chris, what about you?
I mean, it's so hard to compare. You know, they're different eras. But their stats are so similar. But like I said during our conversation, you know, come back to me when Lewis has got seven, and then we'll talk. But, you know, they're both so good. I think Hamilton's going to overtake him in a lot of those stats. And I mean, if he does, I mean, you're going to have Hamilton over a longer period of time. You know, I think he'll probably get it next year, and then whatever happens after in 21 after that, who knows? But like, let's say he can win in 21 or after. I mean, that's what three or four different car types. I mean, generations basically he's won in. So I mean, at that point, I don't think you could really argue that
Hamilton's that's a good not point. That. And the old rumor about him maybe going to Ferrari never seems to die away. So you know, he'd be the only guy to ever win in three different teams, which. That's the other stat that I forgot to point out. Both these guys have now officially won drivers' championships in two different teams. So something that not many guys have ever said they could do to win multiple across multiple teams. So, David, what about you? I know you're newer to Formula One, but, you know, you have a present bias, or are you still leaning toward Schumacher or someone else?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard to really debate this. I mean, both are excellent drivers. Stats really show there's not comparisons there. So Hamilton still has a few solid years left to definitely overtake Schumacher, which I fully expect that he will. And by the end of his career, I have no doubt that he will probably have higher numbers in every single category there. But, I mean, that's part of the funnest. You know, some guys will debate one way or the other, and that's kind of the fun of, you know, why we watch this and debate of why we think this guy's better for this reason or that. So
I think it's interesting too that Hamilton has had certainly much less controversy surrounding his championships than Schumacher has. As you mentioned, you know, James is driving guys off the track, just purely running into your competitor on the championship clinching race, or parking your car in the middle of Monaco to ensure that you are the pole sitter. Things like that, thankfully, Hamilton has not done, and I'm proud that I can say that as a Hamilton fan. So love him or hate him, but it's interesting too that, you know, with all, you know, the press wants Hamilton to, they want to have a storyline, and they're dying for him to say he's the greatest of all time and all this stuff. And he never takes away from Schumacher. And he himself says that he still thinks that Senna is the greatest driver of all time, and that he'll never even be able, even though numbers-wise, he's surpassed Senna quite some time ago. He still thinks that on pure driving talent that he doesn't even hold a candle to Senna. So he's a true champion on and off the track, whether you love him or hate him.
That's for sure.
All right, so the thing I wanted to ask you guys about, since you're all sharing the same experience, your very first in-person Formula One race for all three of you guys, what did you think of the sound, the smells, the speed, the acceleration, all that fun stuff, and smells. I wasn't referring to that Detroit style pizza after effect. Oh, yeah, don't forget the barbecue.
Shout out to Franklin's great food. Yeah, not great for four guys staying in the close quarters together though. All right, so David, what'd you think of the weekend?
And it was a lot of fun. First F1 race. I've been to a few NASCAR races, but it's been pretty sparse out there in terms of fans. But man, people were packed out for this, and it was fun to see. And, you know, I definitely go back again. I got to say, there was a lot of downtime between practice sessions, between qualifying. But, man, just sitting there watching those cars go around, the speed that they're going, we were in that perfect spot where, you know, you just watch them break and just go around just a tight turn. So it was awesome. Definitely on my radar to go back again in the future.
All righty. Chris, what about you?
Yeah, had a good time overall. I think – what surprised me was just the lack of sound, or the lack of sound of the engines. You know, it was kind of disappointing. And on TV, they sound amazing. Well, not amazing as they used to, but still, they sound pretty loud. But you get on the track, and you can pretty much just talk to the people next to you and not even, you know, try to talk loud. But other than that, I mean, good. You know, Austin is weird.
Yes, it is. Sure. So, I left that out, but yeah.
But yeah, that was a good race overall. I enjoyed watching all the strategies play out. And, you know, we had a good race. And I'd definitely go back. The experience was, you know, cool. Just, you know, all the F1 fans in general are just very passionate people. So it was just a cool experience to be there and witness his sixth championship.
Very nice. James, what about you? Yeah, I thought the whole weekend was incredible. You know, the track is beautiful, and I really couldn't have been happier with our seats, being able to see, you know, the top of turn one, the S's, and then obviously turn 12 through like 15 was awesome. It was cool. FP2, we moved over and sat on the hill to watch those guys go through the S's. We were able to see Grosjean crash right in front of us, which was pretty sweet, to be expected for sure. And then, you know, outside the track, we had a chance to meet some of the people that we interact with a lot on Twitter, able to share a few drinks and a whole lot of laughs. So I thought all in all, it was a very successful weekend. Definitely cannot wait to go to another Grand Prix, hopefully next year. And I tell you what, I will make sure I'm parked between the lines, wherever that might be.
Yeah, we'll never forget getting towed from our Airbnb. So
the morning of the race.
30 minutes away from town to one of the loveliest parts of all of Austin, I have to say, to get our car out. So, yeah, that was a first for me.
Yeah, and then just making it barely in time for the start of the race.
Barely to our seats, yeah.
I think we literally sprinted the mile and a half from our car to our seats. So, yeah. Well, we made it, boys. We made it. That's all that matters.
That's right.
All right, guys. Well, let's call it a night. And it's been a longer episode, but we certainly appreciate it. You know, you guys hopping on with us. And obviously, it was a heck of a guy's trip. Hopefully, we can do it again in the future. And then, yeah, we met some awesome people as well this weekend. And it was just great to interact with passionate fans who love the sport. We love to hate on each other and our drivers, but we all have a great time. And we love the sport itself. So, we'll wrap it up, and we will see you guys probably next week for a Brazil preview coming up here in just a few days. And then, yeah, be sure to check out the Sports Talk Garage. They've got some Big Four action, college basketball just kicking off soon, or I should say tipping off soon. Obviously, football is in well-screened and well on its way, so a lot of good action between both podcasts. So be sure to hit that subscribe button on both, and be sure to, if you don't mind, drop us a 5-star review. That means a lot to us as podcasters. So thank you to Chris and David and James. You guys have a great evening, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to have your sports related question or comment featured on the show, please email us at sportstalkgarage@gmail.com. Also, if you want to keep up to date with us outside of the show, please follow us on Twitter at sportsgaragepod. If you enjoyed the show, please drop us a 5-star review and subscribe if you want to hear more. So for Chris back in the studio, David and Matt, I'm John, and we are the Sports Talk Garage.